Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Laurie Sonberg, co-founder and board member of LVS Brokers. Hey, Laurie, great to have you on the show. How's everything going today?
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for having us on the show. It's been a great day so far and looking forward to having the podcast with you.
Cool. Well, let's kick it off then. And maybe you could just give us a bit of background about yourself first.
Yeah, so my name is Lars Omarberg. I've been an entrepreneur and also small-scale investor for the last 10 years. My first business was kind of online business. I ran an affiliate network which operated in both Finland and Sweden. And during that time, I kind of got to know the co-founders of LVS Brokers and also many of the consumer lenders and banks which are currently customers of LVS Brokers. That's kind of my brief background.
Maybe you could just give us a bit of a hint as to, or some background as to what LVS Brokers, what you guys are doing right now.
Yeah. So basically the LVS in our company name comes from our initial vision of helping consumers acquire both loans and insurance products and electricity agreements easily through us. And the company was established in 2013. There is currently 4 owners in the company and 4 co-founders in the company. And basically, we've been developing the company since 2013. And last year in 2019, we did 12.5 million euros in turnover at an EBIT of 1.15 million. So we've been extremely growth oriented right from the start. And we try to invest as much as possible from our profits into further growth. Currently, we are active in Finland, which is our home market, and also in Denmark and Poland. Most of our turnover comes from brokering consumer loans, so meaning loans between 1,000 and 60,000 euros from both banks and other lenders. All of our brokering technology is built in-house, and we own all of the IPR to it, which we feel is really important in our business. We're 15 employees. We've got 8 developers, meaning coders, and then 3 customer service personnel, and then 4 people in business development.
Okay, cool. That's a great overview. And you mentioned that the approach, you guys have approached growth by making certain you invest in it continuously. So how does it play out when you look into scale and grow continuously? What approaches have you used to do that?
I think there is a major difference probably between bootstrap companies, which we are, and then companies that have external financing from, let's say, venture capital investments or other companies. So all of the money that we get for scaling comes from our paying customers. So the approach that a bootstrap company takes to scaling is probably very different from a VC-backed fintech. Most likely, most bootstrap companies are very kind of oriented on the return on the investment that they do. And basically, the major kind of approach that we have as a bootstrap company is, in Finland, the 2 questions that we continuously ask: how can we scale up the amount of consumer loans that we are brokering, meaning the more banks we have and then the more good quality applicants that we are able to get from our marketing activities, those kind of dictate that. And then on the other side in Finland, we are continually asking which other products could we also sell to the customers which are already in our customer database, which allows us to increase the lifetime value of every customer in our customer database. And then kind of beyond our home market, the question is, to which countries does it make sense to expand our consumer loan brokering activities next? For example, there's a few countries where the market is already kind of divided between the winners and the losers. For example, in Sweden, there is a clear market winner that kind of dominates that market. And we don't feel that it makes any sense for us to invest money and effort into trying to get a small market share in Sweden. But on the other hand, there is still an opportunity still available to grab some meaningful market share in other countries, for example, in Denmark and Poland, where we are active. So it's kind of the approach is to be really objective in assessing, are we able to compete in a specific market or not? Does it make sense to invest money and effort into capturing market share? If we don't see any chance in kind of becoming one of the top players in the market, then we don't enter that. So it's like always saying no is really important.
Well, that's some very interesting insight there. I mean, as you go through the process of maybe saying yes or alternatively, obviously no, how do you test those channels? How do you go out and say, okay, we can't go into Sweden because there's a big competitor? Or do you use social media? Is it contacts on the ground? Is it a mixture of both?
We try to find out if there is a dominant player already in the market. For example, with Swedish companies, it's easy. We can find out which are the largest consumer loan brokers. And for Swedish companies, the turnover numbers and the profit numbers are public information. So we can check it out for online. And basically, the largest consumer loan broker in Sweden does something like 70 million euros of turnover at a profit of 30 million euros per year. And if you kind of take that into consideration, then probably Sweden shouldn't be the first market that we enter into. But then in Denmark, we did the kind of research, is there any player that is active there? There wasn't really a dominant player, and even the largest consumer loan brokers in Denmark, they are nowhere near the scale that the Swedish one is.
Okay. And it sounds like obviously you go through a process to look at public information and other information. And then I guess you get through that and you are wanting to make certain that you hedge your bets on the right markets. My question is, what specific metrics other than competition and people in the market are you looking at to make certain you get into the right market, you're on a winning cycle, and you can, in a way, land and expand and grow your business?
For us, what we basically do is we match demand. It might be a consumer loan or an insurance product or an energy agreement. So the demand comes from the consumers. And then on the other side, we have to have the service providers, meaning the banks and the lenders and the insurance companies. So we try to make sure that there is kind of enough of both. For example, with us in Denmark, there is kind of enough banks and consumer lending companies that want to operate in that business. So that's the kind of supply part is there. And then we kind of make an assumption that Danish consumers aren't necessarily that different from German consumers or Finnish consumers or Swedish consumers, meaning in the sense that probably if you educate Danish consumers enough, they will also start using brokering services. So it's kind of somewhat copying a business model that already works in another country and seeing that could this business model also be applied to this country.
Now, entering different markets, obviously the team's growing not just in size, but also geographic locations. What methods have you used and are you using to make certain that you rally the troops behind a common, maybe scaling purpose or growth purpose?
The kind of major tool that we've been using internally is the kind of objectives and key results framework. So we have kind of five main objectives and each has 3 to 5 key results for the next 6 months and the 6 months beyond that. And we try to communicate those OKRs to the entire organization as clearly as possible and kind of as often as needed so that everybody knows what we want to achieve and what the common goal is for all of the people in our organization.
Again, as you go into new markets and you grow your team, obviously you're looking at making certain that you recruit and retain top talent. What tactics or methods other than your close network have you used to good effect?
Basically, I think for most technology company, and I personally think that most companies are nowadays technology companies. So even if you take a really traditional company nowadays, it probably has some kind of technology dimension to it. which means that basically every company wants to hire really good developers. And that is the challenge that all of the technology companies and pretty much all of the companies have. How can they find excellent developers who are able to kind of push and develop the technological features that you want to add into your product that kind of arise from the business needs? And how are you able to kind of find those people? So what we try to, and the methods that we use, is kind of clearly communicating the benefits of working at LVS Brokers. So you can focus as a developer on building one product, which is our brokering platform, instead of hopping from project to project in like you would do in an IT consultancy. Then if we are able to convince an excellent developer that, okay, he wants to build one single product and put his focus on doing that for the next years, then we obviously compete with other technology companies and other fintechs for that talent. And then we emphasize kind of the internal good things that we have, and also the fact that we were the 8th fastest growing fintech in Europe in Financial Times listing, for example, for 2020.
Some really interesting points is there. You've mentioned communication a number of times, and I guess, you know, making communicate to your team, not just your close team, i.e. the founders and the owners, but the wider team, is vitally important to get everyone behind, you know, the plan and what have you. But other than your objectives and making certain that people do understand the strategy, how else are you communicating with your team and making certain that there is a connection and there is collaboration that's ongoing across the organization?
We're a small company of 15 people, so theoretically it shouldn't be as hard a problem for us compared to a company with, let's say, 150 employees or even more than that. But I think even in a small company, once you expand beyond the size of only having the founders, then constantly communicating and making sure that everybody understands what are the overall objectives of what we are trying to reach and everybody is aligned with them. Kind of specifically what we do is that if we have a kind of business development person, for example, a certain business development person is currently in charge of our expansion into Denmark, then that business developer should have a dedicated developer, meaning somebody who is able to kind of technologically code into our products the features that kind of business developer wants to and that the business needs to be added there. So it's kind of a team effort between the business and the development side and the technology side, and that translates into hopefully good collaboration between the two of them.
Definitely, it sounds like a good mix, business and technology working together to help clients, to deliver solutions for clients.
Especially since then, one on the business development side and then on the technology side, they are kind of a team that has two different skill sets that hopefully when they work together for an extended period of time to reach the common business goals, then hopefully also on the technology side, that person kind of gets more ownership into that specific initiative.
Going forward, I mean, we're just coming out, well, I guess we're just moving into 2021 in the next couple of months or so. So ending up 2020, what are your growth plans over the next 12 months? What are you guys looking to do?
I think for many companies, they had specific growth targets for 2020. And then the situation with the coronavirus probably affected those growth targets a bit. Well, if you have an kind of online business, then probably it might be even possible that coronavirus affected your business positively and you were able to grow faster than you originally planned in 2020. With us, it was kind of different. We were on track to kind of almost double our turnover for this year. But then in the middle of March, we saw that many of the partners and banks that we work with, they tightened their scoring models and didn't give out as many consumer loans to good applicants as they used to. And because our revenue comes from a percentage commission of paid out consumer loans, that meant that also our revenue targets for this year weren't going to be made. So for us, the plan for next year is basically to do the things that we were planning on doing this year. I think the good thing is that it also kind of gave us time to develop the technology needs that we wanted to build into our product over this year. And then basically the growth plan has been the same right from the start. Identify new verticals and new products that we could kind of use our technology brokering platform to broker products and financial products and other products to our consumers, and then also identify maybe other new countries into which we could expand.
With your plan over the next 12 months, what obstacles or challenges do you foresee coming out of where we are right now, I guess globally and obviously specifically out in Europe?
I think the kind of universal obstacle in scaling companies is that there might be kind of three different specific phases in a company's life and growth trajectory. It's kind of fun and easy when you only have the founders and you typically have, let's say, 3 to 5 founders in a company. All of the founders know the business and all of their objectives are really aligned. Then you kind of start growing the company and then it transforms into a small company. So how to turn it a business that is run by 4 co-founders and owners into a small company that might have teams and a management team, and how do you build that? And then if you even grow beyond that and turn into a large company, then you encounter another kind of set of obstacles. How do you go from a small company into a large company? And I think the question that companies should ask kind of internally and the co-founders should ask is that, am I still the right person at this development phase to do this work? Or is there somebody else who could do it better than me and who has already experienced from it? For example, I've never worked in a large company, so I wouldn't want to be the CEO or work in a large company. I know that I'm not the best person to do that. But then for many founders, it kind of becomes difficult because they have built the company with the assumption that they are going to work inside it. They have a hard time of kind of transforming themselves from being a day-to-day manager into maybe being a board member and not being active in the day-to-day management of the company anymore.
I think you came up with some really interesting insights. This really touches on some of the stuff that we might chat through now. As you move forward, what questions are you yourself and also your ownership and founder team and maybe other management staff inside the company asking yourself to make certain that you continue on that growth trajectory? 2021, you can tick that off and then continue down the path of growth and scaling.
It's easy to kind of sit down and write down objectives, and then you hopefully start doing your best work to reach those objectives. What maybe sometimes is lacking in companies is the self-assessment of, are the things that we are doing, do they make any sense? If we want to grow, for example, in Denmark or in Poland, are we generating revenue there? Is the revenue growing monthly, or are we just kind of acting and trying to do something but aren't really accomplishing anything? And if the answer to that is no, we're not really accomplishing anything, then to make the hard decisions of we probably should be doing something differently, or then there might not be a business opportunity here at all. And that is especially difficult if you have worked towards reaching objective for 1 or 2 years, you have invested hundreds of thousands of euros of money into that, and you have invested time into developing that. And then it's really difficult to say that, no, this isn't really working out, and it will probably not work out. Then it's too easy to throw kind of bad money after good money. So it makes sense to test out things and see if your assumptions are actually working out. But if they aren't, you should be able to pull the plug and move on to better initiatives that have a higher probability of working out.
Yeah, so some really excellent advice there. And I mean, you've been around, you're an entrepreneur over the last number of years. A lot of my guests have mentioned that they always are continuously evolving and continuously learning. And part of that is making certain that they're up to date with the latest books and what have you, that and thought leadership that comes out of their particular area. I mean, so just on that, what book are you reading right now and how is it helping you in your next part of your journey?
I think one of the good books that I've read recently is Measure What Matters by Jim Doerr. So it revolves around the objectives and key results. I think it's a good framework. And for us, initially, we were a small business run by the co-founders and all four people. We knew each other. We knew the business inside and out. And we knew what needed to be done. And all four of us were completely aligned on that. And for us, the difficult part was then how to turn this four people, co-founder-led exercise into a real company. And the OKR framework for us was kind of a good way of doing that. It allowed us to explicate the objectives and the key results and what we want to achieve and kind of communicate those to the organization and the people who we have working in the company.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'll definitely take a look at that. And how can people find and connect with you and LVS Brokers?
Basically, you can go to lvsbrokers.com. I'm on LinkedIn and then basically just reach out to us if you have any questions. Like I said, I'm also a small scale investor. So if you have a good business opportunity, I'm always happy to discuss with any aspiring entrepreneurs.
Oh, great. That's really cool. I'm sure some people might reach out and have a chat with you. It's been brilliant. I really enjoyed our conversation today. And thanks for giving us a glimpse into your world and also some great insights around certain aspects of startups and scale-ups.
Excellent. Thank you for the podcast and excellent discussion.